Hello everyone, I'm Tech Sergeant Shane Hughes, and you're listening to Beyond the Horizon, a podcast produced by the Ohio Air National Guard's 178th Wing in Springfield, Ohio. And in today's show, Staff Sergeant Rachel Simonis interviews Colonel Dennis Fournier, the new commander of the Mission Support Group, about his military career and his philosophy of leadership. I hope you enjoy the show.
All right, so to get started, what made you initially want to join the Air Force?
Well, I don't come from a family of affluence, so mom and dad were not putting a lot of money aside, any money aside for my education. And I was actually trying to work a full-time job in construction and trying to go to school at night. And it took about a year in the University of Nevada. Came to me and said, Mr. Fournier, your 0.86 GPA does not rise to the standard that we maintain for this institution. You are probably going to need to go back to the community college and boost your GPA before you can reapply for admission at the University of Nevada. And so, looking for different ways to pay for school so I didn't have to work as much, that's what turned me toward the Guard. I was watching a lot of my friends going into the Guard and spending an awful lot of time in school, and I wanted to do that too. And so I originally got in the Guard for the education benefits.
And what was your first job in the Guard? Sounds like you were enlisted then.
I was. I enlisted in 1987, and I was, back in the day, it was called an imagery production specialist. And I worked for a tactical reconnaissance group in Reno, Nevada, for the Nevada Air National Guard. And they flew F-4s, and they did exactly that, tactical aerial reconnaissance. And so they were collecting imagery and they'd bring it back to our lab, and as an imagery production specialist I did all the processing and all the printing of all the images that they took of the targets, and that's how I got my start. And that was my first deployment. I went to Desert Storm. I was in Bahrain, and we were actually doing the job that I never thought we would be doing anything more than training for. And so that was a thrill. It was a real thrill to see what we did at home and how it translated to the battlefield. And being the only tactical reconnaissance unit in Desert Storm, we were very, very busy. After that, I switched over to the imagery systems side of the house. And so I went back to tech school for 6 months and did the electronics portion. And so now I was working on all the equipment that I used to use to do all of my imagery production. I did that for about 4 years after Desert Storm, and then did a five-year recruiting stint, and really, really enjoyed that job. That was a fantastic job. It was a chance to, get out into the public and extol the virtues of the Air National Guard and sell all the benefits and entitlements that originally attracted me. So it was really easy for me to do. I really, really enjoyed my recruiting tour.
And so after your recruiting tour, what ended up making you want to commission, and what was your career path with that?
So I was trying to commission while I was in recruiting, and I actually met 7 different interview boards for commissioning opportunities, and I was shot down every single time. I was just, beat out by better people. And but that was, something that I was like, no, I'm not quitting on this one until they tell me, no, you're too old. And I did. When I finally was selected, and it wasn't even a selection. That was the interesting part, is getting shot down 7 times and, continuing to grind and to persevere was one thing. And I think it was my leadership at the time, my chief of staff for air, and my wing commander. I had received a rather prestigious honor. I was a recruiter of the year for the entire Air National Guard. And so I'd always been doing the best I could right where I was so that, maybe I'd be the obvious choice for whatever came next. So having that little accolade, my director of staff for air and my wing commander noticing that the intel squadron manning document was missing one officer, and it had been down one officer for about 14 months. They basically just said, hey, come with me. And they walked me back across the street to my old squadron, and they told my commander, your intel officer position has been vacant for too long, meet your new intel officer. And that's how I got commissioned. It was not because I was out there just, you know, beating people for these selections. I was the one getting beat every single time. So this was a real gift. It was a gift. And, you know, I've just tried to make sure that they have never regretted that decision ever since they offered me the opportunity.
It's interesting that you got turned down so many times, but you kept just working at it and kind of excelling where you were. I guess what would you say to people that, you know, I think the guard, sometimes it's easy to get discouraged if you don't get that AGR technician spot that you were hoping for, things like that. What would you tell people who are turned down several times to, you know, keep them motivated? And
well, I think I had it in my head that it wasn't no, it was just not now. You know, maybe this wasn't the job for me. You know, you start falling back a little on your faith when you're told no. And, you know, I would remind people, too, it's like, you know, we're told no far more times than we are told yes in our careers and our lives. So no doesn't necessarily mean no. No oftentimes means not now. And so keep grinding, you know, and keep your eye on that which you're, what you want, and do well. Just do well right where you are, and hopefully, with the recognition of a job well done, you will be the obvious choice for whatever is supposed to be next.
That's awesome. So once you commissioned, you said you were an intel officer. Where did your path take you from there?
So I went right back to the squadron where I was enlisted, and so I, and that was an interesting transition, going from just one of the guys to the guy in charge. So immediately upon my commissioning, it was right after 9/11. 9/11, of course, was October or September rather, and I was commissioned in November, and so with an emphasis on fighting the new global war on terror, I immediately, upon graduation a year later after my commissioning, because I went to Intel Officer School and then I went to the combat targeting course. And so I spent a year in school after I got commissioned. But immediately after that, I went right into a training phase for the U-2 and for Global Hawk and for Predator. And I was a mission operations commander for what they call the Distributed Common Ground System. And we had our own distributed ground station in Reno, Nevada. So we were one of six guard sites that had that. And so I went right into combat operations right out of school after my training down at Beale Air Force Base. And so Title 10 from, 2003 till almost 2012. And there was a variety of things, because our intel squadron back in Reno was really unique. We had three operational missions. We had Eagle Vision, which was a satellite imaging system that was deployed in Aldafra on a pretty regular basis, and we just cycled folks in and out of there. We had the DGS, which was back in Reno, which was a reach-back operation. And then we had SCAVEview, which was a C-130 borne ISR, manned ISR capability, and we used it primarily for DOM ops. And then the theater commander got wind of SCAVEview. We brought it into theater, and it didn't leave for 8 years. And so I only had 19 operators and 11 maintainers to send, as well as the officer, you know, who was supposed to be the detachment commander. So we spent an awful long time in the desert. And I had two deployments to Iraq, which were fantastic learning experiences. Again, you know, you really, really start to understand the seriousness of your job when you get to apply it in a combat situation. And when we were there with SCAVEview, and I was forward deployed both times, and then another time I went back to Qatar to work in LUD at the Combined Air Operations Center. But when you're forward deployed, the level of seriousness about your job is really, really amplified. It was not uncommon because we were out in Indian territory and at a base called Al Asad, which was out in the Anbar province. You've heard of Hit and Haditha and Ramadi and Fallujah. Yeah, same area. And so it was a hot, and very contested place to work. And it was not uncommon for the folks that we're supporting, you know, out on those convoys, out on the route reconnaissance and rolling up bad guys. Their Humvees were come back, you know, shot up, And it was a constant reminder day to day that what we were doing was vitally, vitally important to those ground forces. So, and that kind of shapes your attitude for the rest of, you know, what your service, you know, could and should be like. So that's where my travels had taken me once I commissioned. And then, of course, deployment to Thailand, which we marketed the that Eagle Vision satellite imaging capability. And that was pretty interesting because I'd never been to the Far East before. Have enjoyed my officer career, especially as a younger officer when I got to deploy and really, really be part of that which was going on in the conflict areas. And that's also where I got to meet a lot of the best leaders that I have ever worked for. And again, I think it was part and parcel to the environment. You know, when you're in a serious environment, serious leaders really, really start to emerge and show what leadership is all about.
That kind of leads into my next question, I guess, which, you know, what military experiences, you just discussed a few, you know, how have those shaped your leadership style?
Well, again, having the good fortune of being able to deploy for contingencies has given me that that visibility into what a good leader looks like. I think the seriousness of leadership is really manifests itself in how a true leader inspires their people, because and makes decisions too, because the decisions they make not only affect their mission, it affects the people who are conducting the mission, and it affects the families at home ultimately if things don't go as well as you hope they do. So, and I've had good leadership from in my enlisted career also, and it hasn't just been watching other officers, it's been watching, you know, other enlisted folks. I remember in Desert Storm, I was a buck sergeant, and I was assigned to a master sergeant from Bergstrom Air Force Base, because it was Bergstrom, Birmingham, and Nevada were all playing in the TAC recce business. And he was just a really, really solid senior NCO. And not only was he good at reminding of us of, you know, the impact of our job, he was really, really reminding us on a regular basis that our production, our analysis is that which is informing decision makers at a very, very high level. And he was really good at motivating us with principles like that. What you do is important. And he's always prescribing quality standards, always giving feedback. And so he was a really, really good enlisted leader that I took a lot of nuggets from. It doesn't have to come from up above all the time, or come from an officer, I should say. You can have really amazing peer leaders. You can have really good, you know, enlisted leaders, you know, folks that just demonstrate qualities of leadership that you want to emulate. And then similarly on the other side, you know, you see some folks who don't do as good a job at leadership, that don't do as good a job at management, you know, accountability and those type of things. And, you know, you also learn leadership lessons from them as well.
So you kind of covered my next question, which are, you know, what do you think are important values or characteristics of a successful leader? Are there any things, you know, like personality traits or moral standards, you know, what are some things that you consider just leadership values?
Leadership values for me, and I practice these routinely, and I've taken them to now all three of my commands. One of which is, and first and foremost, it's got to be purity of motive. You know, we've heard that kind of tagline before, but purity of motive for me is, you know, doing what we do not for selfish reasons or selfish interests, but the interest of service. You know, I always talk to a lot of my folks when it comes to discussing responsibilities. And I say, you know, the name on the left side of your uniform means more than the name on the right side of your uniform. So I try to translate that into, you know, the overarching concept of purity of motive. The other one is transparency. I don't keep any secrets. You know, we try to keep things rank appropriate, but I don't keep secrets. Keeping secrets and not having transparency fuels the rumor mill. It creates cliques. You know, there's a lot of times when you have a clique, that clique will have a leader in it, mm-hmm. and that leader will take that clique in a direction that the organization may not necessarily want to go in. And so it's very, very important to be transparent, so that everybody hears the same message at the same time from the same person. That's absolutely critical in my mind. And then the last one is, I don't want to say it's the last one, but it's one that's really important to me, and I took it from General Norman Schwarzkopf. I read his book years and years ago, and he had a simple statement that said, when in command, take charge. And it's not just because you're in a position of authority does not make you a leader. I know you have, I have, many of us who would be listening to this have seen folks who are in positions of authority who are incapable or unwilling to lead. So take charge. Take charge. And then leadership takes constant work. Like all of my folks that I've ever been working with, so when it comes to, you know, their work, their service, I say things like, you know, lean out over your skis, you know, do all you can, not just what you have to. Those are the big principles that I have. And then, you know, we talk about the Air Force core values. The Air Force core values are foundational to our service. I remember when I was being selected I was actually interviewing for the branch chief position up at the National Guard Bureau. When I was there working in the ISR Directorate, one of the folks on the panel asked me, you know, what if you could have a fourth core value that applied to the Air Force, what would it be? And I had never been asked that before. I'd never considered it before. And so I started to consider it, you know, on the spot. I came up with humility. Because all too often we've seen folks who like to, you know, pound their chest and beat you over the head with their resume and all that sort of thing about all the things that they've done and how awesome they are for their service. Those are the folks who have very little to learn because they already think they know it all. And so I think humility is a fantastic fourth core value. And the continuum of humility sounds a little bit like this to me, is, you know, humility allows for opportunities to listen. And when you're listening, that provides opportunities for collaboration. And collaboration leads to innovation, ultimately. And that innovation leads to improvement. And improvement leads to lethality. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be lethality in terms of the effects that you bring to the battlefield. Lethality could be, you know, the effect that you bring to your craft. For the mission support group, lethality for me looks like, you know, securing the funding for a building project to, you know, to upgrade or build new facilities for this base. Lethality to me is you know, making sure that, you know, a promotion is processed in a timely manner so that individuals on the receiving end are getting that recognition, getting that promotion, and then ultimately getting paid appropriately. That's lethality as well. And there are several different, you know, examples of lethality in the mission support group because we're, you know, such a diverse organization. But those are just a few. The last one would definitely be believe in your people and invest in their development because they're the future. We're not. I'm sitting here I'll be 53 in a couple of months. I've had a 33-year career thus far. I'm hopeful that somebody sees enough in me that they allow me to serve for a few more years. But I'm not the future. Our folks that are coming up are. And so we really, really need to invest in their development.
You know, what are some of the challenges that you foresee yourself facing? It's kind of a trick question.
Yeah, to show some leg on this one, I'll be straight with you. It's in my new role. because keep in mind, outside of a 5-year recruiting tour when I was enlisted, I spent 10 years in Intel. Outside of a 2-year public affairs officer position with the state of Nevada, I've spent my entire officer career in Intel. And so to break the confines of the intelligence discipline and move over into mission support, my biggest challenge is figuring out what in the heck I'm doing from day to day. It is so diverse in the mission support group in all the different mission sets. It is well outside anything I've ever done. I mean, I've always had this familiarity with, you know, the Force Support Squadron handling military records, you know, CE handling buildings and facilities, you know, logistics handling the supply function, you know, and comm flight handling all of the things that we need to communicate, services, you know, handling our dining facilities, our mortuary affairs, our MWR responsibilities. I've had that level of familiarity. And similarly, contracting, you know, nothing gets purchased outside of a GPC unless it goes through contract. And that is really the sum total of my familiarity with all these activities. And now, as a mission support group commander, I walk in and I'm wondering, okay, so what corner is it going to come out of today? And I was just mentioning to one of my colleagues, I said, my professional life is a sea of uncertainty right now because I'm just not familiar with it. I told this person, I said, you know, I know I'm rowing, but I don't even know if I'm in the boat. I may be in the water rowing for my life and not making a whole lot of progress. So that's really the big challenge right now, coming out of Intel, 33-year Intel career, by and large, and coming into mission support and trying to figure out how do I apply my concepts of leadership, my experience, leverage the network that I've created over the last 33 years for the benefit of this organization with its varied and diverse mission sets. And so that's really my big challenge. And then I'd say my other challenge is while I'm still trying to figure out what the heck I'm doing, I've got to develop my replacement. And so that becomes an additional challenge as well. So I would say that those are my big challenges in my current command. But I'll tell you what, I've come to the conclusion that it is never too late in an individual's career to get re-blued. And I'm feeling it right now. I'm fulfilled by this, and it has absolutely renewed the energy I have for service to the Air Force.
So it sounds like you've got a full plate. How do you plan to overcome some of these challenges?
Teamwork. You know, in a word, it's teamwork. You know, I've got to rely on the folks that that have been doing the jobs, the various jobs inside the mission support group. You know, mobilize that team across all of the squadrons to divide and conquer, first and foremost. You know, trust those experts in each of their crafts and embolden them to take more responsibility and to take a more active role in managing and solving our current issues and our challenges. And then also collaborate across the groups. You know, we've got a lot of new group commanders. ISRG's got a new group commander and Lieutenant Colonel Rourke. OG's got a new group commander and Colonel Kazmaier. So, you know, stay involved across at the group level right here on the base. Advise and take advice from our boss, Colonel Fitzgerald. For me, in my enterprise is stay involved. Well, first of all, get myself known to and aware of the other mission support group commanders, not just in the state of Ohio, but across the country, and stay involved in those councils to elevate the concerns that we have locally, get those into the mission support group council and to the Air Directorate Functional Advisory Council so that we can start making some headway in addressing some of the issues and the challenges that we have, and also understanding, you know, a lot of it is expectation management of myself, is, you know, you're not going to solve every issue. Sometimes those issues can only be managed. And I've got to keep that in the forefront of my mind too. So, you know, within trusting the experts, it's, you know, make sure that they understand that there are opportunities for them. opportunities for them to take my seat when it's time for me to depart. And so start illuminating those opportunities and creating more so that they can work on their development, so that they're prepared. And I can, you know, hand my boss a handful of absolutely worthy candidates to take my place. So that's how I intend to overcome the challenges.
So you've talked about, you know, really lengthy, fulfilling career and kind of developing a, you know, a replacement. Where do you see yourself going after this role?
Well, I'm hopeful that my current leadership, both here at the local level and at the state level, you know, sees a need or has a desire for me to take on another role, because I've still got a lot of energy despite my years and my years of service, and I'd be thrilled at the opportunity to continue to be able to serve for as long as I'm effective and as long as they see a role in which I could be effective. But I'm also, you know, not afraid of the idea of having to move out, because I believe that everybody should have the same opportunity that I've had, and I am not one who will camp, you know, just homestead, if you will, in a position, because that's just, you know, not how I operate. Because I'm always looking for the next, because I, you know, you're never too old to grow. I'm always looking for the next, and I would love to think that that could happen. But if my next is retirement, then that's okay too. And I would still stay probably active across the military associations in which I'm currently involved, so that we can continue to pursue and hold on to the benefits that our military currently has, because what we're fighting for today is not for us, because we're sunsetters, but it's for you, the younger people, because somebody did it for us, you know, earlier in my career. So that's what I'd see myself in the future. Hopefully serving, continuing to serve in uniform, mm-hmm. For the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. But if not, moving out of the way so somebody else can have my opportunity.
So speaking of the younger people, what advice would you give to airmen who are just starting out their careers and, you know, are just trying to figure out really what they're doing?
Okay. First and foremost is just stretch yourself. You heard me say it earlier is, you know, do all you can, not just what you have to. Absolutely, positively stretch yourself. Take your training seriously. Again, going back to my Desert Storm experience, that was the first opportunity where I got to see my training put to action, and it was critically important. It was critically important in the wartime environment, and so I would say, you know, that starts back at home. Take your training seriously. Stretch yourself. Do all you can, not just what you have to, and then deploy. You know, at every opportunity, deploy. I mean, we are good at what we do right here at home, but we're not going to get better right here at home. We have to get out, ply our trade in deployed environments, exercise environments, learn from other people, challenge ourselves, challenge others as well. Because there's been, you know, several times in my career where my peers were the ones, not my leaders, my peers were the ones that forced me to elevate my game. And so I would say that to new airmen too, is, you know, challenge yourself and challenge others. And then the last thing I'd say is take that crappy job, take that crappy assignment, take that deployment that isn't as Gucci as some of the other deployments and exercises that you may go on, because it's probably going to be the best experience of your career. And it may not be because it was the best experience that somebody else provided you, but it's going to be the best experience that you provided yourself.
All right. I think that kind of wraps it up. Is there anything else that you'd want to add that I didn't touch on?
No, I think this is a good interview. I appreciate the line of questioning and and an opportunity to kind of, you know, speak some philosophy, if you will, and tie that philosophy to some of my experiences, and then just encourage folks to make the most of their Air Force career and never, never forget that the name on the left side of your uniform is more important than the name on the right side.
All right, thank you.
That concludes today's episode of Beyond the Horizon. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe and leave us a rating and review. That helps us rise in the podcast rankings and helps others to find our show. If you're looking for more ways to connect with the 178's Wing, you can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also write to us at beyondthehorizonpodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to connecting with you.